Hi, I'm Rosemary Martirana, Director of Intelligence here at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. And today I'm joined by our Chief of the Analysis Bureau, Dean Barata. Dean, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Rosemary.
And we also have in the room one of our Senior Intelligence Analysts, Paige Schilling. Good morning, Paige.
Good morning.
And recently, Paige and Dean had the opportunity to attend a conference hosted by Voxpol in The Hague, which is in the Netherlands. And for those of you that don't know, Voxpol is an academic research network focused on researching the prevalence, contours, functions, and impact of violent online political extremism and responses to it. During the conference, the Chatham House rules did apply. And for those of you who are not familiar with that term, participants are free to use the information received, but neither the identity nor the affiliation of the speakers, nor that of any other participants, may be revealed. But we wanted to take the time to dive into some of the overall trends and key takeaways from the conference. And so to begin with, I'll ask the both of you, what was the purpose of this conference and what were each of your presentations on or what did you talk about?
So it was really quite an interesting conference since when you compare what the environment that we have in the United States versus what all the European countries face, they, under the auspices of the European Union, work together to combat terrorism and online radicalization. Now, for us, it's kind of easy because we all fall under U.S. law. You know, what happens in New Jersey, for example, and California isn't all that different in a lot of the big questions. But in Europe, it can be much more difficult. You have different languages, different national laws. And so this is one of the ways in which they try to sort of ease communication and sort of ease expertise crossing those sort of national boundaries. So that was sort of one of the purposes of the conference. I spoke on the use of open source information in building subject matter expertise in terrorism. And Paige, I'll let you talk about what you talked about.
Yeah, so I presented on neo-Nazi use of the internet, specifically neo-Nazis compared to other types of white supremacists. And really, I drew attention to the shift we've seen after Charlottesville, Virginia, the protests there in the United States of registrars and U.S.-based social media sites essentially pushing off white supremacist or violent content, and how we're seeing this kind of shift into either the dark web or to servers that are less regulated than those in the United States. So it was really interesting. The conference brought together people from a variety of different perspectives, all within kind of the same industry. So there was perspectives from major social media companies, as well as individuals that are tasked with removing online content, and even people that focus on CVE, countering violent extremism efforts. So it was really interesting to get us all in the same room. And I think besides how great the presentations themselves were, it was the discussion and networking in between that really, for me, proved to be some of the most powerful takeaways.
So on that topic, Paige, do you think this audience, was this the first time they'd heard any perspective like this from the United States? Or do you think they hear this regularly? Is this a new topic or one they've been tackling over there as well?
Yeah, I would say my presentation impacted a number of individuals in the audience. There was even one individual who's from Germany and basically said, you know, he spent most of his life disassociating himself from Nazi Germany and repelling all of that hate. And it was astounding to him to see the level that existed in the United States and the way that neo-Nazis were behaving and how, you know, they were admiring this Nazi regime that he had tried so hard to distance himself from. And I think overall, especially with my presentation on the neo-Nazis, I think people learned a lot and they had kind of a different insight onto how they operate here within the United States.
So this was a pretty unique opportunity for our office. And certainly, I think we were one of the few organizations represented from the United States at this training academy. And so what are some of the things that you learned, Dean, while at that conference?
Couple things. The first is, I do think certainly at the European Union level, they probably have very good contacts with federal agencies. It's just, I think that hearing from a state perspective is probably something that's a little more unusual for them. So, and it was a great opportunity for us to get to hear the various sort of national and supranational perspectives. But for us, I think one of the things that struck us was the attitudes on both sides of the Atlantic of freedom of speech. So obviously we have the First Amendment protections. And in the U.S., we generally take a pretty hard line about freedom of speech in terms of being very broad in what we allow. And for a lot of European nations, I think that is a bit more challenging. For example, I think what many European partners may consider threatening online activity could get taken down according to their national laws. Whereas for us, for a threat to reach that level, it needs to be very specific, right? You need to generally identify a specific time, a specific target. You can't just sort of make a general proclamation against a type of person or speak what we may assess to be aspirational. So that's one of the interesting sort of differences between our two sort of democratic systems. And then the other is about privacy concerns, where I think on both sides of the Atlantic, we take privacy very seriously. But there in Europe, they seem to have heightened sensitivity about privacy concerns. You know, if you think of both privacy and freedom of speech as sort of spectrums, we were a little more concerned about maintaining freedom of speech. They seemed a little more concerned about privacy. But, you know, we were close enough that obviously that we could discuss the issues reasonably.
So you mentioned that they will often maybe remove these accounts mm-hmm. from certain large social media platforms. You know, Paige, in your opinion, do you think this is effective? Like, are they having any success in doing this? Or does it seem like it's just, kind of whack-a-mole?
When we're talking about white supremacists specifically, I think there is content removal, but we have to remember the sites that they're functioning on where they want to be is really the big US-based sites. So Facebook and Twitter, so they reach the largest audience, right? So they're recruiting and spreading their ideology. So in terms of European removal of content, I think it depends on the social media site and the domain registrars and if they're registered there and how effective they are. And it just seems generally it's easier to remove Salafi jihadist content. It's easier to remove an ISIS beheading video for social media companies and big domain registrars than it is to remove hate content or white supremacist content. But it did seem like there was a proactive effort on their part if they did see that type of content to report it to the social media companies for removal.
Which is something different from what we do here. Here, the government does not get into the business of recommending specific content being taken offline. But in Europe, specific countries have specific laws saying some types of hate speech are illegal. And so they therefore have entities within the government that look for that content, evaluate that content, and then will forward that directly to whatever internet provider it is saying, hey, this violates our laws. We think it also violates your terms of service. And, you know, we would request you take it down.
And Paige, I just want to touch on something you mentioned you kind of just brushed over in your statement there, and that was that some of these Salafi jihadist organizations want to get back onto the larger platforms like Facebook and Twitter. Not to get off track here, but why do you think that is specifically?
So this was absolutely one of the takeaways from the conference on my end, as I spend a lot of time focused on white supremacist groups, obviously, and not so much on Salafi jihadist groups. But essentially, one of the presenters kind of went over how Twitter is really being effective in taking down content. So for a long time, there was this narrative that, you know, we're just playing whack-a-mole. We're not really going to accomplish anything because as soon as we take an account down, another one's going to pop up in its place. But what certain studies have found is the effectiveness of taking down seed accounts. So the accounts that are really spreading the propaganda have the most consumers of that propaganda. And each time you remove them, they may come back, but they're a less powerful version of themselves, a less influential version of that Twitter account. And like any extremist group, ISIS, you know, if they're pushed down to Telegram, they're kind of narrowing their market of people they're speaking to. So, of course, they're going to want to go back up to the Twitters and the Facebooks where they can get those people that are kind of on the line. Maybe they're dabbling in the content but aren't sure. People that are on Telegram are pretty entrenched already in the ideology. They've gone down there to join specific channels. So in order to really get into that recruitment pool of the broader audience, they want the social media companies to be able to accomplish that.
And we'll link to one of those reports that actually Vox Poll published just a couple weeks ago that sort of demonstrates the effectiveness of those takedowns. We'll put that in the show notes.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so a little bit of a peek behind the curtain now. Were there any major similarities or differences between maybe our intel shop or how intelligence agencies here in the United States function versus theirs and their experiences?
It was kind of interesting to see as we got to talk, not just in the conference, but outside a little bit with other practitioners, that we are often using very similar tools. We're trying to address the very, very similar questions and in many cases face some of the same challenges. So in some cases, it's kind of reassuring to know that we're sort of all on track, and then a little perhaps disheartening to know that there are some big questions that we still haven't cracked yet. But overall, I have to say, you know, the professionalism and the standards of everyone we met were super high. And it was great to have an opportunity to sort of to talk to them about how they do what they do.
Especially for, you know, during Dean's presentation on open source internet search tools, when you sit down and you kind of like go over specifically like what tools we're looking for, what tools are attractive, it's interesting to see how, you know, our shop is looking for low cost or no cost resources that are effective, that are easily learned between the analysts. And it was the same for the European shops. And I think in a lot of cases, we had a lot to kind of exchange, like, have you tried this app or have you considered like this free software? And I think that's one of the benefits of attending conferences like these.
So overall, what were your impressions of the European security there?
Well, it's interesting you should ask. I think we were in the country less than 6 hours before I got pulled over by somebody. We were down in the train station and waiting for a train to get to our hotel. And like any tourist, I decided to take a picture. And within about 2 minutes of taking a picture there, a Dutch police officer rode up to me on a bicycle and just started asking me questions, wanted to know what I was taking pictures of, asked to see the pictures on my phone. So very much probably the same sort of encounter that happens countless times a day in the U.S. But I will say this is, I think, the first time I've had an encounter like this. Dutch law enforcement was super professional. They handled it in a very tourist-friendly manner. They approached me speaking English. I don't know if I'm American-looking enough that it gave it away, but that's the language they immediately engaged me with. Were very accommodating. They did ask to sort of see my passport, but that was it. When he left, did not feel like an intimidating encounter at all. So, you know, kudos to whoever that patrol officer was. He did a great job. Other than that, you know, where we were certainly sort of heavily touristed areas, and you could see sort of the countless opportunities for there to be threats behind every corner. And yet it did seem like at least the Dutch cities we were in navigated that fine line between having security and not making you feel like you were in, you know, a clamped down sort of prison yard. And so they did seem to have a good environment there in meeting between those two. And then if we're talking about sort of airport security, I was in Europe for something else a few months ago, and there are sort of subtle differences in terms of how different European countries and the U.S. handle airport security. So it's close, but it's not identical.
I left Dean alone for 2 whole minutes in the train station by himself.
And he took a photo.
Yeah,
that's
and he
what
gets
happens.
Himself in trouble.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise any of us.
I need supervision at all
Constant
times.
Supervision.
So this was the first time this office had presented overseas or internationally. And did you guys find that there were any real challenges in doing this and working with a different audience?
I think I just approached my presentation differently. So I have a tendency to speak very quickly when I'm presenting because I get very excited about my content. So I had to kind of remind myself that, you know, this audience in particular, English was not always their first language. And so I needed to be clearer and more concise and slower. And I had Dean in the background, like, you know, hand gesturing to me to slow down at certain times when I got excited. But also in terms of presenting for any analyst is remembering who your audience is, right? So these people were all international. So if I'm going to reference Confederate symbols being something white supremacists rally around, I had to make sure to kind of give them the background and the historical context to why they would care about Confederate symbols and what I'm referencing. You know, those things may not be immediately apparent to them. I don't know, Dean, from your perspective, if it differed with OSINT tools.
I think very similar for our presentations. We wanted to make sure what we were going to tell people was relevant. And so one of the first questions that came to my mind is, what is somebody from New Jersey going to tell somebody in what superficially at least is a very different environment? And so I began looking at the areas in which we might be similar. And New Jersey is actually, I would argue, has a lot of similarities to a small European country. We're, we've got about 9 million people, which is about the size of Sweden. It's very diverse in terms of religion, in terms of ethnicity, in terms of country of origin. It's very economically diverse, too. We have both some of the most wealthiest municipalities and some of the poorest municipalities in the country. We're sandwiched between two major cities, New York and Philadelphia. So in those regards, I think that is something that a lot of Europeans can sort of relate to. And then I highlighted the big difference, which was in Europe, a lot of law enforcement agencies are sort of consolidated, whereas in New Jersey alone, we have more than 500 law enforcement agencies active, which I think kind of blew everybody's mind when I went through that. So that was really the key, is finding how we can describe our similarities and then beginning to talk from there.
So we've had been invited to several conferences locally in New Jersey and across the United States, and I know you've each gotten to participate in a few. So was this conference unique when compared to those other ones you've attended?
Absolutely. So I thought in terms of the content, this conference was really unique. It spent equal time on white supremacist presentations as well as Salafi jihadist content and those types of presentations. And I think what's interesting for me as an analyst when I'm hearing them speak about Salafi accounts on Twitter and taking them down and how effective that is, I'm thinking about the trajectory of Salafi jihadist content online and wondering if that applies to my portfolio and if I will see a similar trajectory for white supremacist groups. You know, this pushing down to deeper and darker areas of the web, and potentially later on wanting to come back up to those larger platforms in order to recruit more individuals. So in terms of content, I thought it was great. And the second takeaway for me from the conference generally was the array of different industries that were represented. So often I'll go to a conference and if it's focusing on ISIS use of the internet, there's a bunch of people from law enforcement. So there's maybe state, local, federal, individuals all sharing information. But here, it wasn't just law enforcement or the intelligence community. It was, you know, people within countering violent extremism that may focus on programs of educating the youth and educating parents about online violent content, as well as different large social media companies. So immediately when questions come up, like, I wonder, you know, what this social media company would do in this specific case, I was able to just kind of look across the room and say, hey, you know, what would you guys do in this case? And I think vice versa, too. They were able to ask those questions to us. So in terms of really covering online violent extremism from like a variety of different angles, I think this conference really succeeded.
Yeah, just sort of riffing off that, I think a lot of conferences do tend to be very focused in that they either appeal to law enforcement or academia. And so being able to pull in private sector, public sector, and academia practitioners and researchers in one room and have them talk and think about how each other's disciplines are relevant to us is what makes conferences like that unique and particularly useful, because it can be really easy to just sort of get caught up in your bubble. So, yeah, I thought it was great.
Great. And then just one final question for both of you. You're in The Hague in the Netherlands. I have to ask what your favorite food was while you were there.
Wow. So this is easy for me. We went and got Indonesian food. There's a large
Indonesian
population in the Netherlands. And we had it, I think it was like a table. There was a specific name for it, but it was basically like a bunch of bowls and plates that everyone shared. And it was amazing.
I agree. Yeah. The Indonesian food was the winner of the conference. Yeah. Excellent.
Wow. No unique traditional food from that region?
Well, there were some great desserts, I will say that. There were some there was in Amsterdam, I can't remember the name of the store, unfortunately, but there was this amazing cookie store. They made one type of cookie and it was totally worth it.
Excellent. All right. Thanks guys for joining me here today. I appreciate it. And, a special thanks also to Voxpol for hosting such an amazing conference. And we'll certainly post any of the additional resources in our show notes. And for more information on our agency and what we do, feel free to visit our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.